Hello and welcome to the latest episode, a new year even, of Horse Player Happy Hour. We're just about at the 1 year anniversary of the first of these broadcasts that we ever did in the early days of the pandemic. As then it is now, I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornital, with you in the Brooklyn Bunker once again. I've even got the hat to prove it, and coming to us from an undisclosed location in the New England region of these here United States. Very happy to be joined by my original podcast broadcast partner and somebody I always enjoy spending time with, talking races with. I'm speaking, of course, about the man with his own eponymous podcast, TV's Matt Bernier. Matt, how are you today?
PTF, I'm good. It's wild that it has been basically a calendar year since we started this whole thing. And it started off as a nice sort of, let's just say, something to get our minds off of the bigger picture of things. But I'm hopeful, knock on wood, if things can kind of trend the right direction this year, this actually takes on a little bit of a different aspect. And we'll dive into that here momentarily.
That has to do with the big announcement that's going to be coming down the pike. We want to encourage folks to pop in the comments wherever you're watching this. We're going to be talking about the racing coming up this weekend. If you've got any specific questions, prefer to keep it focused maybe on the three big derby preps. But hey, if you have another question about a horse or something, hit us up. We're happy to get to that. We're going to have a special guest star. You can probably imagine who it is popping in and joining us at some point. Want to remind folks that in coming weeks, there's going to be a contest accompanying what we're doing today, and that will benefit two very important charities. We've got the Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance, whose job it is to accredit all the various aftercare organizations, and then our founding partner over at the In the Money Media Network, Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation, also going to be benefiting from the house cut, if you will, of the contests that are going to be involved here. You can give to these organizations independently as well. TBAftercare.com for the TAA, and for the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation, TRFinc.org/players, the link to give to support them. Let's just kick off. Let's not bury the lead any further than I already have, Matt. Some changes from what we did last year. Last year, we definitely helped a lot of people on their journey to qualifying for the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge. I feel like we're going to be taking it one step further this year.
Yeah, you know, we kind of discussed it a little bit on the side, discussing this as a possibility for this season. But the idea of week in and week out, there wasn't anything that really kind of joined these shows together. They were all sort of one-offs, and there was no continuity with any of it. And we thought maybe it would be a nice little wrinkle to make some sort of a tour out of it, or some sort of a regular season leading into a postseason, and have kind of the grand prize situation be something along the lines of a Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge seat. So I think after all the smart minds that possibly could be, mine and yours withstanding, got together and put together what seems like a bit of a regular season in a playoff situation, where the regular season points leader will end up with a BCBC seat, and then the overall winner of the playoff situation will also get a BCBC seat. So from now right through, let's say, the end of October, because that's when the final table will happen as far as the playoffs go, there's every reason now to play every single week, and we have something that we can kind of use from a programming standpoint as well.
It's going to be fun to have that continuity. Just an overview of how it works. One thing I'm so excited about is the idea of a tour that doesn't cost the participants much money at all. We're going to use at the end of the year your top eight scores from the 20 or so of these broadcasts. So we're talking about a chance to two extra chances to qualify for Breeders' Cup full Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge entries, $10,000 value. And we're talking about having to put up, potentially as little as $160. And oh, by the way, a big chunk of that is going to go to charity. Couple of different prongs here, as Matt mentioned. There's going to be the tour. So we're going to take your best scores from throughout the year, your eight best scores. We're going to compile a tour score for you. The top one, as far as that goes, is going to get a seat. How that's going to work: you get points for top 10 finishes. A win, you get 10 points. A 10th, you get 1 point. Rotisserie baseball, as we used to call it, fantasy baseball, scoring out from there to determine the points for totals 2 through 9. And there's going to be fierce competition, I think, to see who can get that. I mean, folks who are of the mindset to look for opportunities where expected value lies, I think they're going to be pretty tickled when we do the math on this at the end, and we see that essentially our friends at Breeders' Cup, along with In the Money Media, are adding $20,000 to this prize pool, where the money is supporting the money that does go into instead of going out of, that goes to charity as well. I'm pretty excited, Matt, to see how this thing plays out.
I think the other thing that I have heard from folks, that whether I've interviewed them from my podcast or just talked to them in general, who are still a little bit, let's say, a little gun shy about getting involved with tournaments. They don't even really know where to begin. They like handicapping on a day-to-day standpoint, but they just still don't know maybe the strategic pieces that go into tournament play. I think not only do you have a large prize available when all is said and done, but you brought up that sort of lower level that you need to get in as far as the buy-in is concerned. And theoretically, you can have your eight scores that count, and it'll cost you, all told, about $160. I think this is a good opportunity for folks, if you're new to contests or you've thought about playing in the past and you've just been a little bit reluctant to get in for whatever reason. I'm hopeful when we do these happy hours, the broadcasts of them, combined with the lower buy-in level and sort of a, I don't want to call it a year-long piece, but let's call it the better part of 6 months anyway, you have something to kind of follow along with. And I'm hopeful that will maybe open the doors to some folks who may have been a little bit hesitant to come through in the past. And hopefully, on top of all the things that you touched on, maybe we can bring in some fresh blood as far as tournament players are concerned.
I think it's a very good point. And, you know, not to knock what anybody else is doing out there in the tournament world, but it's very hard for a low bankroll player to compete in live bankroll play. And, you know, granted, this is mythical play, but when you think about an event like the NHC Tour, you got to be well healed to be among the leaders of it. That's you know, it's not a knock. It's just a reality of the way that it works. We're talking about something where for very limited money, you can be part of something that's going to hopefully become a big thing that we can follow along. I know between your show, Matt, and this show and other spots on the In the Money Media Network, hopefully we're going to have an opportunity to bring in tour leaders and follow that drama as we go. And that's just one element of that. That's one of the added Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge seats is going to come via the tour. There's also the playoffs that you alluded to. Pretty simple on this one. The top two people every week are going to qualify for what we're calling the playoffs. And then the playoffs will start with approximately 80 players. Let's say the 40 who qualify by finishing first or second, then we'll pull from the tour and bring in players who have top scores who haven't finished in those top two. So, you know, you two ways to get to the playoffs. You finish in the exacta any week during the regular season, or you have one of the top tour scores that didn't. Those 80 people have a chance to play in a select tournament for the second Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge seat. And I feel like we came up with a semi-clever way to run that. We're not just going to run 1 week, $2 win place and see who gets the seat for that. I think we have a way that might reward skill a little bit more.
Yeah. I mean, we're going to go through and cut the fields in half effectively. And it's going to hopefully reward the folks who are continuously involved in playing well, as opposed to having sort of that one-off where you end up opening up by 100 or 200 points and nobody can run you down. And when you chop the field like that, I just think not only does it give some incentive to say, you know what, maybe this week I'm not smashing it, but I'm doing okay. I'm middle of the pack, middle of the table. Maybe that is just enough for you to get on to the next week. But at the same time, it does sort of incentivize you to continue to go through and make sure that you are playing well, because I think it just kind of firms up the idea of the skill aspect of it. Sure, you can have a one-off week where things go crazy, but if you're consistently there or putting yourself in contention, I think you're going to be the ones who are rewarded when all is said and done. But it also doesn't – I think it's just a nice sort of happy medium where we're working against the idea of one person just streaking away and having it all their own way, but also you have to perform well in order to make the cut.
And it's logical to me because this is a tour, right? And a tour is supposed to be all about the interconnected series of events. So that one person who gets 232 1 week, like, that's fantastic. But you do that in our first round of the playoffs, all that gets you is to go from 80 to 40. So maybe the player who doubled up or did a little better than doubled up on their initial bankroll, they get the same reward. And I like that leveling of the playing field. And I feel like you're more likely to reward the better player by having to survive that gauntlet of it's going to go 80 to 40, 40 to 20, 20 to 10, and then we're going to have a new format for that 10. We're going to do a final table. It'll be part of a broadcast that we do in our final Horse Player Happy Hour a couple of weeks out from the Breeders' Cup. And in that one, you're going to have to show a little bit of live bank playing skill as well. I think it's a really fun test, and we hope that people out there are as excited as we are. Remember, talking about $20,000 added to the prize pool in the form of these two Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge seats. And also, crucially, this is all going to support charity. We assume, as happy as we were with the numbers last year in Horse Player Happy Hour, we're assuming this is going to really juice the numbers. That means juicing the pot in terms of the amount of money we can give to Thoroughbred Aftercare. I'm pretty excited about it.
Well, and look, we think it's a great idea. Our friends with the Breeders' Cup and Horse Players, everyone seems to think it's a great idea. But really, when push comes to shove, it's up to the folks playing. So we need this to either be supported, or if you think that it's not the bee's knees like we do, then we'll find out pretty quickly. But ultimately, this is something we tried to put together that I think not only creates more excitement throughout the year from our standpoint, from a broadcast standpoint, but also I think it does sort of enable the players who maybe are new to it, or even the diehards week in and week out, to your point. You're looking at this saying there's $20,000 that are just being thrown into this. And it almost doesn't make sense not to play. And I know it sounds like I'm, you know, being a full blown, spokesperson for it all. But the idea is, if you're anyone who has played in these sort of things before, to your point, you know how much these things can cost. This to me feels like a no-brainer, sort of a must-play week in and week out for that low buy-in level. So I think it's going to be fascinating, and I'm hopeful that the players out there, whether they're new or existing, support the idea.
I should have probably made this point earlier. You're still having the opportunity to win a BCBC seat along the traditional path. We're talking about these events being $20 feeders where you win in to the qualifier on the Saturday. So correct, you're still getting that value as well. This stuff is all just, you know, icing on the cake and the cherry on top of that, if you will. So that's something else I should have, a bit of a host fail that I didn't point that out earlier. It's going to be great. We're going to start the first one next week. We want folks to mark their calendars. We don't have the full lists. I think some of them are going to be Thursdays. Some of them are going to be Fridays. We'll get a full list out so you can circle those dates, put them in your calendar, and make sure that you show up for it. But I can tell you that the first one will be next Thursday. We want you all to join us here. Very easy. The game's happening via horseplayers.com. The games will go live early in the week. Sign up and follow along. And I'm really looking forward to getting back into the habit of regularly covering contest play again. You know, that's something, Matt, when we were colleagues at the place we affectionately call the place with the letters, back where you and I, all the way back in 2014, if you can believe that, started a little show called the DRF Players Podcast, from which all of this stuff emerged. But my main role back then, that was a freelance gig, not even a freelance gig, just something we decided to do for both of us. We had other jobs at the place, and for me, one of those was talking to contest players. And what I love about that is the opportunity to really celebrate the people who make our sport go, underappreciated in many quarters, though not all quarters, but in many quarters, the horse player. And to get to celebrate that and show that people who play this game can be stars on the same plane as the more famous athletes, human and equine, I think it's an important thing to acknowledge. And I'm hoping, too, that with this innovative final table format, we're going to be revisiting. I can't say debuting, because we did use it for the World Horse Players Tour a couple of years ago. But I think that's another way to show horse players to good effect and feature them as stars, the way that we've been able to do, or that others have been able to do in the poker world that helped the explosion of that game.
I think you also alluded to something that I certainly don't overlook. I mean, I regardless of the fact that I've been in the business for a little while, I'm still not someone who is willing to just pony up these giant buy-ins that are necessary for some of these events. I want to win my way in. And I feel like, you know, talking about how this is an opportunity to showcase the horse player, I think this also affords the opportunity to perhaps hear from some folks who, you know, you kind of touched on it. Maybe they don't have the means to be able to go and play in some of these and just buy in outright, where from a proper ability standpoint, they are every bit as talented, if not more so, than some of these other handicappers who may have the means to be able to buy in. So I think now maybe we have a chance to hear from some of these folks that perhaps you wouldn't have in the past simply because they didn't have the ability to get in there in the play for the 5,000, 10,000 sort of buy-in. I think now this is a chance where maybe we can sort of unearth some hidden talent that's out there that wouldn't have had an opportunity. Now they do because of the lower buy-in.
I love that idea. And we did see kind of a who's who of players in the contest world participating in these Horse Player Happy Hour games last year. Let's see some of the regular names we saw. We saw Matt Bernier's name on there a lot. Mike Baychok, NHC champion, he was there. Tony Joe, the Terminator, speaking of the World Horse Player Tour, he was a regular in that regard. There was a whole bunch of – there was one other guy. I forget his name, but he made a big splash, like two entries – in the NHC a few years ago. I think he had a deep run on the tour. I think maybe Ryan Flanders got to him and beat him late. I can't quite remember. What was that guy's name?
Does he have big hair?
He has big hair.
As soon as you said Ryan Flanders beat me, I remember today was April Fool's.
I had to get one April Fool's gag in there somewhere, JK.
I'm glad
it was at your expense.
I was listening, and I'm mad that I didn't get to say playoffs.
Oh, that's good stuff. JK, this is an event that feels like, you know, obviously you've helped us on the back end, but feels like something you could feel pretty good about promoting to players, knowing the way that you'd like to see things shake out in the contest world.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, anytime – there's an opportunity, you know, when we started the World Horse Player Tour, like part of the whole vibe is that the horse player doesn't have to always pay for the carrot they're chasing. And our friends at the Breeders' Cup and were friendly enough and understanding the importance of horse players enough to put up that $20,000 for us to be able to provide that carrot for players to essentially chase throughout these events. And it's always fun to, you know, Matt does a great job getting players involved and getting to know other horse players that are out there and hear different perspectives. You know, we surround ourselves with like-minded individuals. And so sometimes it's nice to see others. And so this kind of tour allows us to focus on the player as well as the horses. It is horse player happy hour. And so having a leaderboard and being able to follow the storylines that go along with it, and then to reward the people that are consistently playing, supporting the charities, and then also trying to get qualified for the Breeders' Cup Challenge, we feel like this is a beautiful backdoor way for people who maybe didn't qualify throughout the year or getting their second entry. And I actually watched that Netflix documentary about those people bribing to get into school. We'll call it the side door. How about that?
Yeah. Gotta be careful about the implications of the words we use, says the guy who was using the word juicing too much earlier today. Production meeting in the middle of the show. We gotta get that. We gotta somehow create a promo for this idea with the clip of Jim Mora. I'm pretty sure that's fair use at this point. So we can have him screeching playoffs in the background. What do you think?
Yeah, no, it's exciting. Like you mentioned, there's two different ways to get it. You know, the easy way is you just accumulate the most points throughout the tour, throughout the year, and you get it. Like you mentioned, the exacta, if you're in the exacta, you're in the playoffs. If you somehow miss the exacta, you get a whole bunch of thirds. You never get that automatic berth. All those thirds will probably equal to you being in that kind of 40, that wild card. Production meeting in the middle of the show, we'll call those the wild card players that get in. And I think it'll be fun. Like I said, it'll be fun to kind of watch it, get those people that have won the previous weeks on as guests, get the halfway point tour leader on as a guest. And, you know, who knows, maybe the person who wins this tour will end up on Fox in a couple years.
I like it. You know, I'm the only one on this particular call who hasn't finished high up in the money at the Breeders' Cup betting challenge itself. I know, you know, Matt, we've spoken about before that what an important big cash that was for you early in your horse playing days. How important is it to you to try to get back to the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge every year? What does it mean to you as a player? And hint, JK, same question coming for you next.
Well, I mean, I think we talked about it last year, and I sound like a broken record. I'll say it till I'm blue in the face. It's the best contest of the year to me, bar none. It's the best horses. It's at the best venues. You have championships on the line. You can get great prices on horses that any other day would be 2-1, 8-5, somewhere around there. Now all of a sudden you're looking at 8 or 10-1 because the field's are so competitive. And again, it is, it's a different muscle for those of you who have never played in some sort of a live money event. It definitely takes a little bit of getting used to, but at the same time, I think it's far and away the most important event of the year. That's no disrespect to any of these other events that are out there, but I love everything about it. I think it's what everyone should be striving for, and hopefully, kind of to Jonathan's point and your point, Pete, this is an opportunity for some folks who, again, maybe you wouldn't have the chance to get in before, or your bankroll or your means didn't allow you to play in some of the other qualifiers. I'm hopeful that this is priced accordingly where we can get as many people involved as possible.
JK, you've had plenty of accomplishments as a horse player. You know, you just have to ask you usually to get you to recite them. But in all seriousness, you've hit your share of pick sixes and had success, obviously, on the NHC Tour, where you did finish first that year, and at the NHC itself. Where does your second place finish and major cash in the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge rank for you among your horse playing accomplishments?
Oh, I mean, it's right there. I mean, obviously the tour will always have a special place for me just because of the, you know, it was just kind of the jumping off point for me to be able to do something that I love. And, you know, it was a hard thing. It was hard to accomplish. And so it, you know, that'll always rank high, but man, that second place in the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge and finishing, you know, second to a good friend, dear friend, Marshall Graham, like, that was pretty special, you know, being able to be there. Obviously 2020 was such a weird year. You know, I think maybe 14 days prior to that, I had lost my father, and it just all kind of felt right. And to Matt's point, you know, I think that if it's a muscle that you haven't exercised before playing in these bigger contests, to be fair, that muscle is what helped me be a better player normally. Because you learn that when you're dealing with larger amounts of money that might make your stomach hurt, it teaches you to play better. And those same practices that you learn when you're betting $10,000, you should apply those practices when you're betting $100. And it's hard to simulate what you get in the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge. It will teach you those lessons to make you a better player on a Wednesday.
Yeah, the idea of playing on paper is one that it works for some people, but unfortunately, I'm not really one of them. When the stakes aren't there, I mean, I feel the act, like a lot of horse players, the desire for action, and you know, I could try to play a live bank contest on paper, and I just know it's not the same as when you put the money down. But hey, why put up that money in the BCBC when you have a chance to win it? And here we're basically giving you three separate ways, the traditional route through the tour or through the playoffs to be able to punch that ticket and, you know, to play, take that money, the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge, and do with it what you will. There's a lot of strategies, obviously, from an expected value point of view. The money's at the top, but it's also a fantastic way to play more conservatively if you really want an NHC seat. If you're going to be betting that kind of money anyway, or you win your way in, you want to treat it like funny money, get up into the lower rungs of the money and go experience what I still think is the coolest horse player party in many ways out there at the NHC in Las Vegas. A little bit of a tangent, obviously a little different this year with the 2021 NHC still hasn't happened. That's going to be happening in Vegas, and then next year's event will be happening in 2022. It might be till 2022 till I get back there, but you know, it's an event that I really look forward to, and I certainly have missed the opportunity to see so many horse playing friends. Events like the BCBC and the NHC, they're as close as we have in normal years to horse player conventions. And I know, JK, you always get a kick out of attending.
Oh yeah, it's fun. It's like, you know, like I talked about, we're all like-minded individuals to a certain extent, and it's like, there's not a whole lot of places in this world that aren't called a racetrack that you can go to, and you look around, there's 600 horse players. You know, I mean, I'd even argue, even if you go to the racetrack, there's not 600 horse players. There's people that are just enjoying champagne, and people there for snacks or to get outside or whatever it might be. And when you walk into the hotel in Vegas and you're just surrounded, got some really great memories, great conversations. How I bet turf races was sitting in the lobby talking to Paul Matisse. You know, and it all happened there at the NHC, you know.
I know that I believe that one of the hidden skills in life, and I think this goes for whatever your business you're talking about, but especially true with all things gambling. Hidden skill is the ability to network. No better networking for horse players than these big events, be they the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge themselves. I mean, heck, I'll throw in the Grade 1 Gamble at Keeneland coming up on April 10th. And, of course, the NHC. I remember, Matt, you had a great line. I think I picked it up for my book, The Winning Contest Player, that the first time you walked in there as a young, gosh, I don't know what you would have been back then, 22, 23-year-old kid, and you said you looked around the room and half of the crowd was as old as your father and the other half was as old as your grandfather. But I know that you weren't intimidated as a young person. You talk to people, and I know you've got some friendships and other relationships that last to this day.
Well, and you know, you kind of brought it up. In what line of anything has anyone, just unless you're a savant and you genuinely just pick it up like a duck takes to water? But in almost all walks of life, people need to learn from people who have had experience and have learned along the way. It's one of those things that I think is part of getting older. You pass things on to the new folks that come through, and you just try to leave your mark one way or the other. And without so many of the people that I've been fortunate enough to interact with and learn from throughout the years, I mean, I wouldn't be where I am now. So I think it is part of, and I'm hopeful that's also part of what this show is all about, these little broadcasts throughout the week where, you know what? Yeah, we're going to talk about racing. We're going to talk about this, that, and the other thing. But if Jonathan can bring up something that maybe allows you to look at a race or think about handicapping in a way that maybe you hadn't in the past, and now you start to factor that into the way you go through a race. Or, Pete, if you bring up something as far as tournament strategy goes or bankroll management or whatever the case may be, if you can just impart these little pieces that – to you or I or Jonathan or people who have been around for a while, it may not seem like we're saying anything sort of, you know, the aha moment, the light bulb mangle, but for some folks that are relatively new to it, or even people that are experienced, it might just be one little nugget that all of a sudden makes them look at things differently, and that can perhaps lead them to improving overall. And I think that's just part of what this whole little industry is all about, is just trying to kind of feed off of one another, root for each other. Obviously, if you're going head to head with somebody, you want to beat them. But the idea is we're all kind of in it together. You can empathize where people are with a bad beat, or all of a sudden you hit something big that lofts you to a different level. So, I just look at it and say the more we can all kind of help one another, better off everyone is.
It's really a great point, that blend between competition and camaraderie that we have in this game. And I'm 100% with you on that idea that it's so important to be able to hang out with and learn from people. And I think it's actually one of the things, I'm going to just go ahead and say it, I think it's better about being in racing in 2021 than maybe it even was a couple of decades ago, where you sort of, you know, went to the track, and I think it was more typical that you just hung out with the people that you kind of knew or saw. And that's cool. But I feel like because of communities like you've created on the Matt Bernier Show, like hopefully we've been able to do over at the In the Money Players podcast, you get a chance to, like, you have a, I don't want this to sound not too obnoxious, but you just have a little bit more say in who you spend most of your time with and who you're friends with and who you talk to the most. And you can make sure you find a group of people that you know you want to win, you know? I mean, because I feel like that was a thing. That was great racetrack advice that I was given a long time ago. I wish I could remember who said it to give the credit, because I think it's such a true and good quote. But the idea is, at the track, you always want to hang out with people that you want to see win. And that didn't always used to be the case. And I feel like, in a funny way, the internet, as obnoxious as it can be, if used correctly, can help steer you to the right people to have those conversations. And you'll even see it with little groups of people in horse racing Twitter who are clearly have each other's backs and are talking about races and are rooting for each other and picking each other up when they fall down, et cetera, et cetera. Speaking of our little community, I'll give a few shout outs here to people listening. I don't know if JK is done with us or if he just hit.
He is done. The iPad has died. So he's out. He wanted to make sure he said goodbye to everyone.
Good. Yeah. He's not, ghosting isn't really his style. He'd be much more likely to tell you everything he didn't like about you before never speaking to you again than he would be just to disappear into the ether like that. But great to hear from him. Always good to get a chance to chat with JK. He'll be working some of these shows. He'll be around some of these shows. We're going to get him involved as much as possible. It'll be a bit of a rotating cast on Horse Player Happy Hour, but folks are used to that from last year. Some shout-outs, Danny Eaton. We've got Randy Carter from St. Louis. Thanks for joining in. Jason Turner from Illinois. We've got Jody Palmer from Wyoming. That's pretty cool. Katie Silverio from right here in New York. We've got some questions. Hey, we got an Uruguayan viewer today. A Turf Uruguay is the handle on that one. Katie Isleb asking about if we're on TV. Only when they let me is my answer on that one. And Cole Adamo as well with a cheeky little comment in the comments as well. But good to hear from everybody. If you've got a question, we'll try to answer it. Jason did have a question. I don't know if you've had a chance to dive fully into the Santa Anita Oaks yet, Matt. So I'll lead off with this one. This was a question about Mraz and the chances. Oh, that's nifty. Producer Craig can pop it right up there on the screen. And her chances in the Santa Anita Oaks. And I'm extremely interested. I felt like last time watching that race back, maybe didn't have the best of things compared to her rival who reopposes this time around. I think she's got a big shot. This division in general, it's very interesting in the sense of I feel like there's still an opportunity for something like kind of crazy and different to happen and a chance for maybe somebody to step up and come from out of nowhere. Because as a group, the three-year-old fillies have had such slow speed figures. Mraz is one of those who I do believe still has plenty of upside, and I'm super curious to see how she gets on out there in the Santa Anita Oaks. Tricky race without much pace signed on, but I do give her preference in that spot. It's a short field, but kind of an interesting little race just to see if somebody can finally step up, take the bull by the horns in this three-year-old fillies division. That's going to be sort of my theme looking through these races this weekend, is who's going to step up and really produce the kind of figure you expect from a Kentucky Oaks winner. You have any thoughts about the Santa Anita Oaks specifically, or Mraz, or just three-year-old fillies this time around in general, Matt?
Yeah, I mean, I can touch on all of them. You know, the Santa Anita Oaks, it's a short field, which is a little bit stunning to me simply because of I agree with everything you've said, that this three-year-old filly crop, I think the three-year-old boys are pretty good all around. I think top to bottom, you've got quite a bit of quality in there. The girls, I feel like it's the complete opposite, where I don't think there's any superstar, at least we haven't seen right now at this point. And I would assume that would entitle folks to take shots when maybe they wouldn't typically do so with any other year where you've got a, you know, I'm making it up, a Behold Songbird or any of these other three-year-olds that were so brilliant. This race as a whole, I wouldn't be afraid of taking a shot. Look, I don't think there's any one girl in that race that is overmatched. I could see any one of the five winning. And I think on the whole, the bigger picture, I'm either waiting for somebody to break the door down and take over and say, you know what, this is my division. I'm going to win the race in 4 weeks' time at Churchill Downs. Or it continues to be sort of mediocre. And then on Oaks Day, you have an opportunity anyway. And this is the way I try to look at many of these races. Unless there is a horse that I just don't have any interest in trying to beat, I want to look for a price alternative. And the best case scenario is when you get a race where 1-14, as far as the Oaks would be concerned, you can't make heads or tails of any one of them. That's when you can shop around and you can end up getting a 20-1 shot that, in all honesty, is probably just as good, if not better, than the horse who's going to be 4 or 5 to 1. So it could go one of two ways over the next 2 weekends. We're either going to see things kind of tighten up a little bit, or it's going to continue to be a bit of a cluttered mess. And I got to be honest, I wouldn't be opposed to that.
It is a potential opportunity. I mean, that's something I wrote about over at theraces.com this week, is my inclination when horses have run as fast as the par for a given level or a given race, I gravitate towards them. But when you have a situation where speed figures aren't telling, where the fastest figures are still well below what's expected for a certain race, like the Kentucky Oaks, that's the time you can get creative and get a little bit wacky. And that's when I find it a lot easier. As someone who considers himself, you know, doing podcasts and whatnot, we have to be, you know, more selection oriented. You don't it's not really that fun to listen to somebody come on and say, here's four horses I like, depending on what the price is. It's not the wrong approach by any means, but it doesn't make great listening. And as a result, I've become a lot more inclined to try to pick horses and just intuitively using value as a guide, of course, but not getting too, all over the place as far as that goes. And when you do that, you're going to come up with a lot of horses that are 6-1 or shorter, because you're going to be picking a lot of horses who are, more likely winners, therefore shorter end of the odds spectrum. But you give me a division where none of them have run the par, all of a sudden I'm looking into the second dam to find a weird little pedigree angle that maybe we can come up with, or getting very creative in how I design the race to get a 20-1 shot loose. Like there's something fun and interesting about looking at the world that way, Matt.
There's a part of me that really believes, or wants to believe anyway, that the Oaks winner is going to come from Keeneland on Saturday. And I think that Ashland is, to me at least, it represents the most potential out of the races we've seen thus far. And I don't want to make it sound like I don't believe in a horse like Travel Column. She looked very, very good winning the Fairgrounds Oaks, but I still have some reservations about, is she actually really a mile and an eighth type of horse against some other horses with some speed that may kind of put it to her early on. So if I don't want to settle for her at a short price, I look at that Ashland, and I don't know if you've done any sort of a deep dive into it, but I see at least two, if not three horses in there that I could really kind of sink my teeth into and say, you know what? I can absolutely see Malathot being the bee's knees, where she goes, she wins this race on Saturday, and she parlays that into a win. I guess this would be the last Friday in April this year for the Kentucky Oaks. I still believe in Simply Ravishing, to the point where I'm tempted to make a future bet on her now for the Oaks at 25-1, because if she does what I think she could do on Saturday, she'll probably be 5-1 when it's all said and done. So I'm not ready to give up on some of these horses who, all right, especially those two girls, we haven't seen them as three-year-olds yet. What I've seen from the three-year-olds that have raced this season, I just haven't been impressed by them. These girls were as fast, if not faster, than the three-year-old fillies we've seen to date as two-year-olds. And typically, even if it's an incremental move forward, it's still going to be faster than what these girls have accomplished as three-year-olds. So those are the kind of horses I'm always going to keep an eye on and be a little bit interested in. There's a horse running at Aqueduct, and we'll talk about the Wooden a little bit, that you can say the exact same thing for. If there's any natural progression, whether it be physically or mentally or a combination of the two, he's already run faster than the vast majority of the rest of the field has. So those are always horses I think you want to, as a handicapper and somebody trying to find value, always give them a second look. Even if you don't ultimately land on them or bet them, just give them a little bit of extra time.
I like what you're saying about the bluegrass, as far as the Ashland, as far as the Oaks go. I feel like there are three in there who could take the division by the horns. Malathot, you mentioned, makes a ton of sense. We had Don, a commenter on here, mentioning Simply Ravishing. Also, you touched on, feels like one who, if either of them show that they've trained on, just looking at figures and developmental patterns past the Champagne, a horse JK and I are both very excited about. What if she steps up again? Really, this is, in a sense, her first start for the new barn, because George Weaver had just gotten her before the impressive allowance performance. We'll get a little bit of a line into her form based on what the Slumber Party does on Friday, opening day at Keeneland. I feel like one of those three could step up. I will mention, before we move on from the Oaks and start talking a little bit more about these Derby preps this weekend, I will mention that I still have a lot of interest in Clairiere moving forward. I feel like she's a runner who, with the added distance and more maturity, could actually move past Travel Column. Looking at current prices, not every horse is priced up. I haven't been able to find a price on Pass the Champagne, who might be my top pick on the anti-post odds. But Clairiere is one. I mean, 8-1 in such an open race doesn't exactly get the blood pumping, but it might be the place that I gravitate. Let's give a few more shout outs here. Tina from Stillwater, Oklahoma. Love to hear that. Paul from Del Mar, always good to have Del Mar in the house. Gary Fitzpatrick from Detroit. We've got Rogelius asking us a question. We'll get to that in a minute. We'll do that next. Oh, we've got the Woodbine Backstretch in the house with Tia. That's good to see. We mentioned Don before. And Mir checking in from Pakistan. I'd love to see that. I love all this international viewership we've got going on this show. Mir, if you're still listening, what's the time difference in Pakistan right now? I want to know about that. But let's get to this question really quick from that we had about the Derby from Regilius. Just looking for long shots for Derby preps this weekend. You know what? Let's handle that. Let's handle that one race at a time. We'll go through these three Derby preps, and then if folks have some more questions at the end, we'll button it up with those, and we'll do about another 20 minutes on today's show. Matt, of the three Derby preps this weekend, which one are you the most looking forward to? Let's start there.
Oh, boy, it's a good question, because I think the three races all present sort of unique circumstances. I feel like Aqueduct is the one where you need to see someone sort of... I guess you could call it the most wide open of the three. I feel like you need someone who will really kind of take the initiative and grab the bull by the horns to take a step forward. For obvious reasons, the Bluegrass, when you have an undefeated two-year-old champion showing up and he's done nothing wrong in four lifetime starts and he's every bit as fast as any of the other three-year-olds, and obviously with Life is Good sideline now, I think you have to look at Essential Quality and say they need to beat him in order for him to sort of lose that top billing. And then out on the West Coast, you know, Medina Spirit it's always felt like he's been second fiddle to Life is Good for obvious reasons. But if you were to take Life is Good out of the picture, you know, would we be sitting here drooling over Medina Spirit because he's a perfect 4-for-4? And again, he looks very similar to a horse like Essential Quality. I guess from purely a racing standpoint, I think I am most interested in seeing Essential Quality down at Keeneland, because I think he's just going to continue on that path that he's sort of laid out. He's always given off the impression that he is quality. He's class. He's got the connections. He's got the pedigree, and he just looks the part. From a gambling standpoint, maybe Aqueduct, maybe the Wood is an interesting option. Having said that, I do think Chad's horse, Risk Taking, has just as good a chance as any to win that race. And I fear people will go a little overboard on Prevalence coming up from South Florida, but we'll find out in time.
Yeah, we'll talk. Let's dive a little bit into this race in New York, the Wood Memorial, a race that has, you know, plenty of historic Derby significance, maybe not quite so much in recent years. My main thought in this one, and maybe I'm being foolish, but I'm tempted to take on both Risk Taking and Weyburn. Really, nothing like against them exactly. Other than I felt like Weyburn had the run of the race last time, and Risk Taking, for as good as he's been, I just wish the figures were a little bit faster. And then Prevalence is a funny one, because I've been tempted in some conversations to defend him in that I feel like there's been maybe a little too much wise guy hate on a horse that I think is, you know, very logical, and I had no problem with the last run, which was just a paid workout, and I love the way the horse finished up in that race, and a step forward would be no surprise. But the crowd isn't going to miss Prevalence, and in fact they're going to probably go a little bit overboard on him. I mean, the current 14-1 for the Derby for a horse with two starts, one of which was essentially a public workout, into the teeth of some of the ones at the top of this market in the division, it seems over-exuberant. So I feel like with those three horses maybe going to take more money than I'm comfortable with, my eye's drawn down to the inside, and that's Crowded Trade, who I thought, given the trips, ran better than Weyburn last time, who I felt like did have the run of the race on the right part of the track. And I'm also interested in Brooklyn Strong. This is another one coming off of a significant layoff in this spot, which certainly gives a little bit of pause. But just Brooklyn Strong, to me, feels like a horse who could get lost in the betting, appears to be working well for the races. And that's where my eye's going. 1-2-2-1. See if I can make a little inside magic happen in this year's Wood Memorial. Where did you ultimately end up landing in the race, Matt?
So, I mean, I've kind of approached it now in a little bit of a different manner, kind of similar to the way that we'll talk about it, I assume, with the broadcast on Saturday when we have the three races going on. Sort of from a most likely winner standpoint, a horse that could offer some value, and then just a bomb who, you know, maybe they can get involved underneath. I do think Risk Taking is the most likely winner. I understand what you're saying about the speed figures, but and maybe I'm trying to make too much of a case for him. I'm at least cognizant of the fact that his most recent fig came at the beginning of February. I mean, many of these other horses, they've come back and sure they've earned low to mid 90s, but it's been a month or so or 6 weeks after a horse like Risk Taking earned his 89 buyer. So I don't see any reason why he can't improve off that number with a little bit of sort of freshening, if you will. He's got the bottom. A mile and an eighth is, if anything, it might be a little bit on the sharp side for him. He had a little green at the end of the Withers. I didn't love that, but at the same time, he's only raced four times, and I'll give him the benefit of the doubt there. And I think with the presence of Prevalence, I do wonder, maybe I'm crazy. I think there's a chance Prevalence is the favorite by post time because of the amount of people that have been so impressed with the way that he's looked in South Florida. I'm with you. It's not a knock, but I just think he's going to be overbet in the grand scheme of things. So I think Risk Taking is the most likely winner. The one I was most interested in, perhaps from a value standpoint, and you brought up the fact that he may get lost in the shuffle a little bit, is Brooklyn Strong. And he's the sort of horse that I was alluding to when we talked about the fillies and the Ashland, where as a two-year-old, he ran as fast as many of these horses have to date as three-year-olds. Now, again, you got to deal with a four-month layoff. You got to deal with a mile and an eighth, first time back, and against the best company he's ever faced. But if there's any sort of move forward, he's not just faster than everybody else. He's considerably faster, unless you think someone's going to jump up in a dramatic way on the speed figure scale. So I'm with you. It's 6-1 on the morning line. I think fair odds on Brooklyn Strong would be 9-2 or better. And I think you're probably going to get that. He's proven at Aqueduct. He's proven at the mile and an eighth. And I just love the way that he finished in that Remsen. We'll find out if he's going to be ready to go coming off the bench. And I guess, you know, I had a difficult time really trying to find someone that I would coin a bomb. But Dynamic One, he's not fast enough on paper, but he looks like he wants to run all day. I thought visually his maiden score most recently was pretty solid. And if you're looking for a horse at 12, 15, 20-1, who maybe he's not good enough to win, but he can run second, third, fourth, something like that, if you're playing any of the gimmicks, I think maybe he's one that could kind of clunk along and get a piece underneath.
That's an interesting idea. Hopefully, I would think for Dynamic One, a change of running style back to closing ways might suit, given everything going on pace-wise in there. But I think you're going to get all of that 12-1. So that is an interesting one at the higher end of the odds spectrum. That angle that we've talked about regarding these horses coming off the layoffs from 2-3, it needs a name, Matt. It needs a name. Now, the first time I ever, you know, in England, where they look at the world through weight instead of speed figures, they call it weight for age, and that, you know, that encompasses like the same idea. But we need, you know, speed figure improvement for age. SFIFA, does that work? I'm not sure if that works. And then the only handicapping book I've really read about that angle in is the Mark Kramer, who I'm going to have on a show very soon to talk about his new book, which is only in a little way about horse racing, but any excuse to talk to Kramer, who's one of the great handicapping book authors of all time. He calls it love at second sight. This idea that you get familiar with what a horse can do as a two-year-old, and it comes back as a three-year-old, and it's like looking at them again for the first time. Same dynamic happens between 2 and 3 and 3 and 4. Love at second sight, another option. But I really think it's smart because it's not one, in my opinion, that is really like properly baked into the odds always. And it, any way you can try to get a little edge in this game, you gotta go for it. I would assume that's an angle you've used to profit over the years.
Many, many times. I mean, I think it is. And I think some folks, you know, layoffs are important. Don't get me wrong. You know, they can be positive or negative. And obviously this horse being gone for this long, yeah, it's a little bit of a concern, but we're also not talking about a horse that's going to be 8-5. We're talking about a horse who is likely at best the fourth choice. I mean, I can't imagine him being third or second choice in this race. I'd be stunned if he was. And to be honest, if he was, it was probably a good thing. But I don't have any problem trying to put together a case with a horse who, again, we've talked about it, arguably has already run as fast as his peers in this race, did so as a two-year-old, did so at the distance, did so at the racetrack. If there's any forward move, I just think he makes a great deal of sense, especially if you're someone who's not sold on Risk Taking, you're not sold on Prevalence. I don't want to give short shrift to a horse like Crowded Trade. My only concern, and I'm curious, I know you do like the horse. I mean, I can't get past the thought that he hung in the stretch. I thought he was going to win by 3. And I guess it's either I'm giving credit to Weyburn for battling as gamely as he did on the inside, or I have to, I don't want to say downgrade Crowded Trade, but at least give a second look and say, why didn't you go on with it? I know it was his first time stretching out a little bit, first time against winners. It left me with a bad taste in my mouth, and maybe that'll come back to bite me on Saturday, but it just bothered me enough that I had to think twice.
I get it. And you're a fantastic visual handicapper. And I could see through that lens exactly what you're saying, that it looked like maybe he hung. I just thought in terms of the trips, you had a horse that didn't break well, wasting energy there. And then I just felt like the track was tilted towards the inside that day. And sure, Rayburn was able to take advantage of that, and Crowded Trade was against it. So my hope with Crowded Trade, and hopefully, you know, the David Aragon, a very good morning line maker, actually has Crowded Trade lower than Weyburn. I was hoping the crowd would see it the other way, give Weyburn the benefit, make him considerably shorter, and you could get a little bit of a puff in the odds on Crowded Trade because of that. We'll see. I mean, it's not one of these things where I could say that I'm sure I'm right and you're not. Like, it could well go the other way, but I was comfortable enough with Crowded Trade to want to wager upon him in the spot. And you made a very good point about the price and Brooklyn Strong vis-a-vis, you know, the problem with the second sight angle, the Sfifa angle in the Ashland is you've got two coming off these long layoffs, you know, because somebody could say, well, what are you, Pete? You're full of it. Brooklyn Strong, you like him off the layoff, and these others you don't like off the layoff. It just comes down to price at the end of the day. Yeah. I think Malathot and Simply Ravishing are going to take up 60 to 70% of the market in the Ashland. They're going to be huge favorites. And so therefore I look a little more cynically at, okay, well, let's look at these layoffs. Whereas with Brooklyn Strong at what I believe will hopefully be all of that 9-2, 5-1, 6-1, I see it as a positive. You have to use price to separate it out. Matt, I have lost track of time. We actually have less than 10 minutes left and two races still to talk about. So I think, unless you have anything burning left on the wood, we should pivot and go a little bit deeper into these other two races that we've touched upon, starting with the Bluegrass. Essential Quality listed at 3-5 on the morning line. That's probably about right. Really unusual race in that you've got just really not a lot of speed signed on. You've got a horse like Essential Quality, known for coming from off the pace, projecting to be up on the lead with the likes of Highly Motivated. Just looking at trainers and jockeys, I would imagine that they might just if nobody wants the lead, I think they'll just go ahead and take it, Saez and Cox, with Essential Quality this time around. I mean, who knows? Maybe with this being the last race before the Derby, they won't want to do that. I'm not sure they're going to have any choice, just given how fast their horse is relative to these other horses early. In truth, for me, those are the two runners I like. I mean, Essential Quality, for all the obvious reasons, no reason to re-mention that here. But I do think Highly Motivated is another one who's pretty interesting off what wasn't the easiest trip last time and now going second off the long layoff. It doesn't get the blood exactly pumping at 3-1 on the morning line, but I was feeling pretty good about just using the 3 and the 4 and going on here, because I think the way that this pace sets up, they could end up running all around there together. So 3-4 for me, 4-3 for me. Very curious where you ended up landing. I know you're excited about seeing Essential Quality. Is he the one you will be wagering on?
No, I won't be wagering on him just from a price standpoint. I just have a hard time biting on anything so short. And I think he might even be shorter than 3-5 when it's all said and done. I do think he's going to win the race. It would be a bit of a surprise if he didn't prevail, even with a horse like Highly Motivated. I know Chad Brown has been quoted recently saying they are cautiously optimistic about his ability to get the distance. I see an H. Allen Jerkins runner when I see this horse, and maybe the pace scenario plays to his advantage at a mile and an eighth, where if they're just going to be walking out there, maybe this is the time that he gets the distance. I just think he's going to end up being a miler or a one turn type. The horse who I really, really fascinated by, and speed figure wise, yes, he's a little bit slow. Class wise, he's definitely getting an acid test. But if you haven't seen the tape of the number 2 Untreated, I would encourage you to go back and watch the Tampa Bay Downs race from March 6th, because it's a move that you don't usually see. And when you see him put in the move that he did rounding the far turn, Luis Saez didn't even move a muscle, and he just looped a field that's actually come back. And I believe there are two next out winners. The third place finisher came back and earned a 77 buyer in the next start. This horse was about 15 lengths clear. Visually, it was spectacular. Now, this is a lot to ask this early in this one's career. But for Pletcher and company to say, yeah, we're going to give it a shot, I think it's fascinating. He would be the horse if I was going to try to play against essential quality or maybe just try to play some sort of a cold exacta. It would be with untreated in second.
It's a very interesting idea. And when you see a middle move like that, you wonder if this isn't just a horse too, who's maybe figuring things out. And if he distributes his energy a little bit more efficiently, maybe could be up there and at least laying in the top flight. What kind of a trip do you want to see untreated getting?
I would like Rosario to be aggressive simply because of the fact that you brought up that there's not a ton of speed in this race. And I don't think you're going to be able to do that. Basically what he did at Tampa, I don't think you can do it against essential quality and highly motivated and some of these other types. If you get up in the run early on though, I do think that there's a scenario in which, you know, this horse ends up being something serious and maybe he can't beat essential quality. That's a big ask, but why couldn't he run second in a spot like this? I think it's one other thing, and I'll leave it on this. Watching tape more and more, it can be the sort of sign of a properly talented racehorse that when they make the move entering the second turn, entering the far turn, and they can kind of either extend or gobble up ground either way, whether they're coming from off the pace or they're out there on the lead. When I see that, that's usually the sign that, you know what, you've got something here. Whereas when you get some of these horses that, for whatever reason, struggle when they're on the turns, it happens. Not all horses can take to it, but that usually, to me, at least can indicate, all right, well, maybe there's going to be limitations as far as this one's overall ability is concerned. Conversely, when you see horses make those big moves on the turn, especially headed into the far turn, that's when I sit back and I go, all right, you might have a little something here. So we'll find out with untreated. I could be entirely wrong. Wouldn't be the first time, but I was really taken by the move that he put in, and for them to throw him into the deep end, knowing it's essential quality has been targeted for this race for some time. You knew who was going to be here and they chose to run him here anyway. I think it's a very confident move.
A move of confidence for sure. It's like you gotta balance the confidence versus the Derby fever. But I mean, in this open year, certainly can't blame them for taking a shot. And I like that way of looking at the world and talking about the ins and outs and the specifics of clues horses can give to tout themselves by watching the running of the races. That's the kind of insight you can get from Matt every week on the Matt Bernier Show. I encourage everybody to check out those shows with video if you can. But we have also, of course, got just the podcast versions too. But check it out on the In the Money Media YouTube page if you're interested. And go back. Matt has done a great job talking through all of the Derby preps to this point, and that's going to continue as we head onward. Let's talk about the Santa Anita race for a minute, Matt. I feel like we've given it a little bit of short shrift. Maybe that's because I am not super creative in the way that I'm seeing it in part. Medina Spirit, I think, is really good, probably better than shown the last day when it looked to me like he was consciously not ridden to want to have anything to do with the freakish winner. Didn't really attack on the turn the way that I would have thought you would have if you wanted to win that race. They felt like that might have a negative effect knowing how good that runner was. They were happy to get their Derby points running second with Life is Good off the Derby trail. I think Medina Spirit to be ridden like the A-team, the first string, whatever, the varsity, whatever you want to call it. I think we could see more from Medina Spirit in this spot. But I will upgrade Rock Your World a little bit. I wanted to ask you about Rock Your World. Dream Shake is the one I want to upgrade a little bit, who did, you know, a little bit more, I think, attempt to run with Life is Good. Definitely took some of the sting out of the finish compared to that scintillating debut. But this is a horse in just the second time going long. I think Dream Shake could really improve. I was hoping for a little bit more than the 7-2 price of the morning line, if I'm being honest. At the morning line prices right now, I would be taking Medina Spirit over Dream Shake. But in picks, I want to use them both in this year's Santa Anita Derby. How do you see it?
Yeah, look, Medina Spirit, I agree with you. I think he is probably – he hasn't garnered enough credit than he deserves. I mean, I think he's the kind of horse that what he's done thus far – again, you take Life is Good out of the equation. He's a perfect 4-for-4. He just happened to run into a buzzsaw a couple times. I also don't know how much you want to do with this, but I believe I had read there was something about an entrapped or a partially entrapped epiglottis, which can be a breathing issue. That if this horse was running through that and still running the way that he has, theoretically, there's a forward move in here. I'm also on record saying that the buyer speed figure in the San Felipe might be a few points too low. So I think he's probably just too good for these horses, and I think he probably wins, whether they want to go right to the front or sit just off Parnelli, who's adding blinkers. The only other horse that I was really interested in, and this is another instance where it may be a little bit too much too soon, but the far outside horse in Defunded, I thought his maiden score was unreal. I thought he was really, really impressive. He just cruised through. He had a little bit of contact at the top of the lane, but basically won without asking beneath Rosario. Mike Smith takes them out here. If you're Bob Baffert, couldn't you, and you really wanted to run this horse in the Derby prep, you know, if you think Medina Spirit is a slam dunk, which he very well may be, I mean, unless you're just content running for second in here and getting your 40 points and moving on, first time going to two turns, it's a big jump going from 6 furlongs to a mile and an eighth, but this is another very confident move. Visually, the horse looked awesome. Speed figures, yeah, he's got to improve a little bit, but I see no reason why he can't. And he's another one. I think maybe, depending on the price, I could see this one totally kind of, you know, getting involved at least second or third in at maybe an overlaid price, whatever he ends up being.
Some clever ideas there as well, Matt. Good stuff. Let's just do a rundown, a couple more shout-outs to folks chiming in, and we'll wrap this edition of the show after reminding folks again about the tour aspect of this thing. Brian Allen, thanks for listening. Gary, appreciate your checking us out and your shout-out to Crowded Trade. Tia questions the rail draw for Brooklyn Strong. It just depends on what the track is doing on Saturday. It wouldn't be the one that I picked, and it's not necessarily a positive, but it also doesn't mean that the horse, you know, it doesn't mean the horse can't win. Let's put it that way. Jerome Brown checking in. Don't forget two turns. Also going to take a guess that that's a comment about Crowded Trade and the possibility that that one will improve going longer. That is another point. Paul, thanks for listening. Michael, thanks for listening. We've got we got Spencer Lugenbuehl in here, and Gary, we'll say one more quick hello to you, the guy who mentioned Crowded Trade before, and that about does it for all the time we have in terms of comments. But, you know, we're going to try to do more this year in terms of making the show as interactive as possible. We'll be playing the races week in, week out, along with the contest. Maybe we can get into a little wagering strategy where appropriate, help folks make some money in real time, and should be a good time all the way around. So join us next week and pretty close to every week for the rest of the season for the Horse Player Happy Hour Tour broadcast. $20 to play and added value, 2 Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge seats. Matt, tell us where we can find you this weekend, and hit us with any closing thoughts you have before we send this thing home.
This weekend, NBCSN show starts at 5:30. We'll have the Wood Memorial, the Bluegrass, and the Santa Anita Derby. I'll be down at Aqueduct. And we're basically going to have people all over the place. Actually, Steve Kornacki is on this week. Everybody loves the big board stuff. I didn't realize this. Steve apparently is a big horse racing guy. So he's going to be involved with all the points sort of shuffling and whatnot. So that should be fun. Nice little wrinkle into the show. Twitter at Bernier_Matt. I've got previews and recaps written over on NBCSports.com/edge. And then obviously the podcast every Monday. I apologize to anybody that listened this past week. I screwed up from a editing standpoint. I didn't mute the race call. So there's a little bit of mishmash where I'm talking over the race call. It's the first time it's ever happened. I apologize. It's bad timing. It won't happen ever again. But you can find obviously that over on endthemoneypodcast.com. or anywhere you download your podcast, or over on YouTube.
We'll have to play Tiddlywinks or Arm Wrestle or something to get to see who gets Kornacki on the show. He's a great podcast guest, a friend of mine, Mike Pesca. I'd love to hear more of what he has to say. But yeah, I learned that recently. There was a nice article about him in the TDN about his affinity for horse racing, and you know, they there's a reason they refer to these political races as horse races and use a lot of the same terms. Kornacki, one of the ones who uses the horse racing terms correctly, yeah, right. I'll point out. So that's going to be super fun, getting a chance to watch him and watch you on those NBC broadcasts. All right, that is about all the time we have. Let's do a couple quick thank yous. Our friends at the Breeders' Cup, especially Peter Rotundo, Jr. Hopefully he will be joining us on some of these shows to at least pop in and tell us what's going on. We wouldn't be able to do this horse player friendly tour without his support and without the support of everybody over there at the Breeders' Cup. Horseplayers.com, we'll shout them out. Lots of opportunities to play on there, not just our games, but definitely check it out. Enter early and often to be part of the first Horse Player Happy Hour tour next week. Shout you out, Matt Bernier. Fantastic stuff as ever from you. For much more from Matt, check out the Matt Bernier Show and the aforementioned broadcast on NBC. JK, we appreciate him popping in until his iPad died. Not sure why he didn't think to charge it and just stay on a little bit longer, but you know, I'm used to it by now. No, in all seriousness, great to have JK on for a minute. Producer Craig, Craig Gorbanoff, DJ Unstable himself. Congrats one more time on your engagement that happened this week. I know that's been a minute in coming, and very excited for you and Nicole. That's going to do it. This show has been a co-production of the Breeders' Cup and In the Money Media. We will be back next week. We want to see you. Play along with us. Help our charities, the Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance and the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation. And until next we speak, may you win all your photos.